The Giant Killer team would like to kick off this podcast thanking our title sponsor for the 2019-2020 basketball season and beyond, the law firm of Condori, Murad, and Neeson. It is through this partnership and support that we hope to expand our reach in providing coverage for Mason Athletics at home and on the road. The KMN Law Firm can help you with many of your legal needs, whether it be helping you start your business or do you need assistance drafting a will or going through the probate process? Or even if you're having property or construction related issues, this is the law firm you want to reach out to first. With two convenient locations for Mason students and alum in Fairfax down the street from the Mason main campus and in Arlington near Mason's law school campus, the KMN Law Firm is your source for legal services. Give them a call at 703-385-2080 or visit them online at www.kmnlawfirm.com. And be sure to let them know the Giant Killer team sent you.
Boyd gets it to Kyer. Kyer with three to Livingston. Long desperation three. He's good!
Hey 10. GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network presents an Atlantic 10 original. The Hey 10 Podcast featuring Petey Buckets and Grant LeBenz.
Tosses it in and it's over. Davidson is going to the dance. They win the Atlantic 10 Tournament Championship.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Hey 10 Podcast with Grant LeBenz and Petey Buckets. I'm Grant LeBenz. Petey's on here with me. Happy New Year, Petey. How's it going?
Happy New Year. How's it going, Grant? Things are good in the Buckets household. We got a sick baby right now. But, you know, getting through that. A little disappointed with my boys from Mason for getting absolutely smoked by TCU a couple days ago. But yeah, otherwise things are good.
Definitely not fun to spend your New Year's Day at the doctor's office. I get that, but you know, wishing the best for baby Buckets and for your George Mason Patriots, whichever comes first in your life. But yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. We haven't done a podcast in a little bit, and there's been a lot of non-conference wrap up going on. We've had a couple of good holiday games. We've had some time off, but tomorrow, and when you guys are listening to this, it will be today. A-10 play starts, and with the exception of Rhode Island, who has one more game against Brown that to wrap up their non-conference slate, we get conference games tomorrow, so we get to get through this jumbled mess that seems to be the middle of the pack of the A-10, and we get to start to figure out who's legit.
Hell yeah, can't wait, and I think that's very necessary, because I think you're going to find throughout the course of this conversation, we still don't really know who's legit and who's not.
Yeah, that's kind of the case. And we've learned a few things over the past couple weeks. I think specifically Duquesne is a team that pops out in that regard. But as you all know, as you listeners know, we don't know what we're talking about half the time. But in that light, we were planning on doing a buy, sell, hold, kind of a quick hitter on each of the 14 teams in the conference. We're going to go down the list. And we've been realizing what we've done this buy, sell, hold in the past. It's kind of vague what we're buying, selling, or holding on. And KenPom is, you know, a database we reference a lot, and normally doesn't become very reliable until about January. So we're starting into that range. But I thought what we could do is go down the list of KenPom projected records in conference play, and we could do our kind of buy, sell, hold based off of those. So that is what we'll be referencing. And top of the list in KenPom, as you probably know, is Dayton. They're up to number 9 right now, and they have a projected 15-3 record overall. So, Petey, at 15-3 in the Atlantic 10 this year, are you buying, selling, or holding Dayton?
I would buy that. I think they're clearly that much. They're clearly that far ahead of the rest of the conference. I think that you know, VCU is going to challenge them. I think that VCU is going to challenge them. I think they're probably going to drop a game to like a St. Louis or a Rhode Island somewhere across the course of the season. And then after that, it's going to be like, don't let yourself get snake bit by any team that doesn't really belong on the floor with you.
Yeah. I think I'd probably hold 15 wins. Just looking at their schedule, I know they play away at St. Louis, at Richmond, at Duquesne, at VCU, at George Mason, and at Rhode Island. So among those, I might see 3 losses. I guess it depends if Dayton's having an on or off night. You know, is Obi Toppin playing well? Are their shooters hitting their shots from 3? I think 15 wins is about, where they'll end up. Obviously, Dayton's ahead of the rest of the pack. They're the best team in the conference, kind of by a significant margin we're starting to see. But, you know, you see VCU won 16 games last year, and that's a bit unheard of because of how down the A-10 was as a whole. But, you know, now you've got this kind of middle of the pack that's been creeping up and looks a lot better. So I think 15 wins is about appropriate for the Flyers.
Yeah, fully agree. Who's next?
Next, we will go to the VCU Rams, who are, what are they rated? They're rated 42nd in KenPom right now. And KenPom is giving them a 12-6 projected record. So a 12-6 buy, sell, hold.
If I'm buying that, does that mean I like them to win like 13 or 14?
Yeah, I think that's what we'll say.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a scenario where VCU absolutely challenges Dayton for the one spot, right? Mm-hmm. I think people are penciling in Dayton as the one seed right now, or as the clearly I think they're the best team, but if we're talking about like what record, who's going to have the best record at the end of the conference season, I think VCU is absolutely in that discussion, because as you said, Dayton's schedule is, you know, they've got some they've got away games against like the top half of the conference, it looks like. So those aren't going to be, you know, those aren't going to be easy. I still like them to win them, but there's definitely a scenario where Dayton goes like maybe 14-4, and I can absolutely see VCU there as well.
Yeah, I'm probably buying VCU at 12 wins as well. I think 13 is probably where I'd project them to be right now. I just think VCU is really tough to beat in their own place. You know, VCU really doesn't lose a lot of games at home. So with the exception of Dayton, I really don't see anybody coming into the Siegel Center and stealing a win. You know, on the other side of the equation, there are away games. You play tough when you have to go into Dayton's arena and try to beat them. That's probably going to be a loss. You know, you've got Richmond on the road. You've got St. Louis on the road. You've got Davidson on the road. Davidson not playing so well, but you know that's still a tough game. You know, I think 13 wins is about appropriate, but
they get Rhodey on the road as well.
Oh, they get Rhodey on the road as well. Yeah, I mean, so there's tough games all around. But
there's a scenario where like VCU goes for VCU and Dayton both go 14-4, and they split. They play each other twice, so they split head to head, home and home, probably.
Yeah, that could be.
And then we get into these nightmare tiebreaker scenarios, right?
Right.
So
right.
I think that's certainly like, you know, I think people are penciling Dayton into the one spot, but I wouldn't count out VCU so quickly.
Yeah.
The other thing about VCU, I don't know how much we want to talk about him here, but we've broken them down a lot in the past. I think my overarching thought on VCU is just that they haven't really clicked yet. You know, you watch them play and you feel like this team has another gear that they just haven't gotten to yet. They beat the shit out of Loyola Maryland, so maybe that was kind of a get-right game coming off that loss to Wichita State. But, you know, we just don't know at this point. I don't feel like we've seen him quite at 100% yet. So we'll see if they round into shape in conference play.
I think that's a good point. Let's move on to number 3. We've got Rhode Island. And this kind of starts this weird middle of the pack that we've been talking about where we don't really know really who's going to emerge. But after Rhode Island womped Middle Tennessee the other day, they got a good boost in KenPom, and Richmond and Duquesne have obviously been falling. So up to 73rd in KenPom with an 11-7 projected record. Buy, sell, or hold?
I'm buying Rhodey to separate from the pack in that third spot. I think that up and down the roster, they're the most complete team behind Dayton and VCU. I think that they've put together an impressive out-of-conference slate despite having a few problems. Like Cyril Langevin has been sneaky kind of bad offensively. If you go look at his KenPom, he's got an 89 O rating for the year, which is not good. He's under 50% from the field. He shot 57% last year. He's still a rebounding and blocks monster, but it's kind of, you know, concerning that he's not contributing offensively the same way he was. So I think there's a chance that, like, you know, he rounds into shape. Doughton finds another gear that he hasn't really been hitting this year. And I think that they're, you know, Rhodey's bench is a little bit thin. They're really only going to go eight deep through conference play. But, you know, they've got lots of defense, lots of rebounding. They've got, I think, more ways to win, really, than any other team when you look at, like, other teams like Richmond or St. Louis, who are also in the contention for the top four.
Yeah, 337th in the nation of bench minutes, and that's only going to go down.
I was shocked by that.
Yeah.
Now you got
Dana Tate, who's transferring as well, so you lose another contributor off the bench.
And they get Antoine Walker, who's looked pretty good so far. So I think he helps them in the front court, but they really don't have a lot of backup at guard. I think it's really just Fats, Jeff Doughton, and then Tyrese Martin are really their three kind of ball handlers, which is just a weird, you know, a little bit of a weird team composition. But yeah, I was shocked by the bench minutes. I've been kind of ripping Richmond for having a thin bench, and it turns out that that Rhode Island's is actually much, much thinner.
Yeah. To your point, Fats and Jeff have both played a tied 89% of available minutes. They're both tied 43rd in KenPom nationally in that metric. So they're on the court all the time. Yeah, I mean, bench is really the one thing that stands out for me at this point for Rhode Island. You know, you got to get significant contributions off the bench, I think, from Jacob Toppin and Mekhi Long. If those two are playing well, you know, you can relieve your starters. And Jermaine Harris, if he's not having a good night, you get a couple other guys coming in and helping out. That's going to be huge. But I'm thinking I'm buying Rhode Island at 11 as well. I'm thinking 12 wins seems appropriate. It's worth noting, too, I think the end of Rhode Island's schedule is a lot tougher than the beginning. You've got, you know, kind of from February on, Dayton twice. You've got St. Louis at home, and you got Davidson on the road. So a couple of tough games there and a couple projected losses in KenPom right now. But if Rhode Island's one of those teams that starts to play better as the season goes on, you know, some of those guys off the bench adding more contributions, getting better minutes, you know, they could finish out strong and make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, the big thing to watch with them is that they literally don't have any backup guards. So, like, if Fats goes down, if Jeff Doughton goes down, if those guys get in foul trouble or, like, have to have limited minutes one night, then it moves, you know, 6'6 Tyrese Martin to doing a lot of ball handling. And then if something happens to one of those remaining two, they've got, like, nothing in terms of ball handling. So that's going to be the big story. If, like, if there's an injury in the backcourt there, you might see walk-on minutes. Like, walk-ons playing legitimate minutes for Rhode Island. There's potential for it to get hairy.
I did not think about that. Hopefully that does not happen. We're optimists here on the Hayton podcast. But moving on to the number four team, and this kind of surprised me, Davidson's KenPom has been pretty high this year, despite kind of a rocky non-conference slate. And they just lost a game to Vanderbilt at 5 points. That felt more like a 15 to 20 point loss. So I think some of the margins for the Wildcats haven't been as lopsided as they have been for other teams, but also Davidson started the season pretty high projected.
Can I say something about Davidson? I feel like every year, Davidson, they just never miss a chance to just beat the shit out of bad teams.
Yeah.
Like they beat Coppin State by like 36. They beat UNC Wilmington by 38. They beat Nevada by 20. Like, I think they're a team that I think buoys their KenPom rating, because they always do that. They always just fucking smoke these really bad teams. And I think that I think that this is a scenario where KenPom lies a little bit because of that.
Yeah, I'd agree. And to that point, whenever Davidson plays Fordham during the year, it feels like that is the most lopsided game in the entire conference. It always feels like Kellen Grady has his best game of the season against Fordham, and they win by like 35. But yeah, no, that's kind of where Davidson's been back and forth in KenPom, right? You lose to Charlotte on the road, you kind of fall 10 spots, but then you beat UNC Wilmington by almost 40, and you jump four or five spots again. So that's where KenPom can be a bit unreliable. And I think to that point, I'm selling the Wildcats at 11-7. That's their projected record right now. I don't think this is a season where Davidson goes below 50% in conference play. I still think this is a pretty good team that's probably looking more in the middle of the pack of, you know, 9-9, maybe 10 wins. But it has not been promising lately, watching some of these games. I mean, I saw Loyola Chicago, Davidson's best player, struggling, but Hyunjung Lee stepped up big and had 19 points. The Vanderbilt game was just a tough watch, and Davidson was down almost 20 the entire second half. So unless something changes real quickly, I don't see this being one of those years where Davidson turns it around and all of a sudden is an NCAA tournament team at the end of the year.
Yeah, they get a pretty brutal away schedule too. Like
to start too.
Schedule. Duquesne and Rhode Island on the road to start. Those are their first two games. They also get VCU, Bonaventure, Dayton, and Richmond all away. So I think they win a couple of those probably. But then if you drop any home games, then yeah, you're looking at like 10-8 or 11-7 in conference. I wouldn't be surprised to see them get to 11 wins. I think I would probably bet on 10. But then I also think that I don't think 11 wins finishes top four this year. I think we start to see some separation.
You're probably right. And I think this could be one of these middle-of-the-pack teams where you have maybe three teams with 10 wins, three or four teams around 9-9. 11-7 is kind of what KenPom has settled on. But I still feel like Davidson might be kind of in that middle-of-the-pack. But they have had one of the more difficult non-conference schedules, so it's really hard to distinguish a team like Davidson from a team like George Mason.
It's still only the one bad loss to Charlotte, but they really haven't beaten anyone good either. They beat
I'd argue the Vanderbilt loss is kind of a bad loss.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
You know, 132nd in KenPom right now. Vandy's not very good, but also it's a true road game, and Davidson was, I think, a 1-point favorite. So,
yeah,
you know, it certainly doesn't look great, but what can you do? Let's move on to Richmond, who is fifth right now in KenPom. Richmond is also a projected 11-7 record. And the Spiders, they've dropped their last two games, kind of got exposed by Radford after a really hot start where they started to gain a lot of momentum.
Yeah. You think they got exposed by Radford? That's the word you would use there?
Exposed?
Is that what you said? I thought you said exposed.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
What would you say?
I mean, they just had a bad shooting. I mean, I guess they were exposed in the sense that, like, they don't – this has been my concern, and we've talked about this on podcasts before. But the concern with Richmond was always, like, they don't really have a way to win games when shots aren't falling. And I know that, like, it's sort of a cliched, sort of stupid analyst thing to say. But I think it's especially true of Richmond because they're not a great defensive team. They're not a great rebounding team. They're a great offensive team. If you look at their KenPom, when Richmond has the ball, it's all green on the offensive side. They're one of the top three-point shooting teams in the country. But like, if they have a bad shooting night, literally anybody can beat them. If you look at that Radford box score, 7-for-24 from 3, 13-of-31 from 2, they just nothing was falling, and they're going to have those nights. And they're not going to beat anybody when they have those nights because they don't do enough other stuff well.
Yeah. I guess when I say exposed, I mean they basically got beat in every statistical category. And obviously the one that matters, like you mentioned, is shooting. Yeah. You know, they didn't rebound better than Radford. Radford's not a terrible team, but they're certainly not a good team either. You know, Radford had more assists. Turnovers looked pretty even. And Radford got to the line a lot more and made a lot more of their free throws than Richmond did. So that's kind of what I meant. And I think we all – I wish I didn't see it coming, but it almost felt like Richmond was kind of due for a loss that they shouldn't have had after kind of escaping Old Dominion on the road with that Grant Golden three and, you know, having a little bit of a tough time putting away Charleston at home as well. So it almost felt like something this was coming, but, you know, like you mentioned, if they have an off night from three, it's almost Armageddon.
Yeah. Gilliard had a really bad three-game stretch. I think he's still a legit first-team candidate, but against Charleston, ODU, and Radford, he had 23 points total on 7-of-24 shooting. He seemed to get back on track against Bama. They scored just fine against Bama. They just couldn't get stops down the stretch. That's going to be a recurring theme for them against good teams. I think their offense is good enough that I'm still buying them where they are. I think that I would not be surprised at all to see them finish in the top four. And I think they might be my pick. They're really small, and they're exceptionally small when Grant Golden goes to the bench. Really, what they do is they move Nathan Kayo, who's like 6'7", plays the five for them. So as a result, they've got a lot of rebounding problems. They don't block shots. They just don't defend, I think, at the level that they need to. But we're kind of talking in circles now because we've said this before, and I don't think the book has changed based on the Radford or Alabama losses.
And just to clarify, when you say you're buying them where they are you holding them at 11 wins, or do you think they'll get more?
Let me look at the schedule real quick. Of course, I clicked out of Richmond's KenPom.
They've got a tough opening.
They do. They get Rhodey away, then St. Louis at home. They start with St. Joe's at home, but then Rhodey away, St. Louis at home, Davidson away, Mason away. So we'll find out pretty quick if they're legit.
Mm-hmm.
I think they probably go 3-1 through that stretch. I think they probably get to 12 wins.
Okay.
I think they get, they get VCU away. Then they get Bonaventure away. Then they get Duquesne away. In between there, they have like Fordham, LaSalle, GW. So I think the schedule is favorable. I think Richmond can get to 12 wins. I think they're probably my pick to finish in the top four here.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I'd probably either buy them to 12 wins or take them at 11. They only have to play Dayton once, which doesn't help a chance at an at-large bid, but it also is a game at home. So. If Richmond can pull that one off, that would be huge. And I think they have a pretty easy end to their schedule. You get George Mason at home, St. Bonaventure away, George Washington away, UMass at home, Davidson at home, Duquesne on the road. So Richmond could be a team that struggles a bit due to a kind of turbulent schedule in January and February, but then come early March, they might be on like a 4 or 5 game winning streak going into the conference tournament.
Yeah, I think it's a good call.
Moving on, the next team, also projected 11-7. This is kind of our block of middle teams, is Duquesne. See,
KenPom doesn't know either, man. KenPom's just like giving up, projecting like the entire A-10 is going to finish 11-7.
Wouldn't it be funny if if some league just had so much parity that pretty much all the teams were like listed at 9-9 or something?
We're pretty close. We've got 4 teams at 11-7 and 1 at 10-8.
Yeah. If it weren't for Dayton having a crazy year, I mean, we could have seen like the projected winner of this league getting 13 wins or something like that. But Duquesne, though, tough last couple weeks for Duquesne, needless to say. And I think they've dropped a lot in KenPom since probably almost 30 spots in their last two losses to UAB and Marshall. Could have been maybe a projected 12 win team. Now they're down to 11. Personally, that feels a bit high. Seeing them struggle against the two opponents that really they should have handled pretty easily. I get one off night, maybe UAB, you don't play so well, you're still somewhat competitive. That's a 9-point loss that felt maybe more like a 3 or 4-point loss, but then you go on a neutral floor and you get killed by
then
Marshall.
You get smoked by a not very good Marshall team.
Right. And obviously it's on a neutral court. Duquesne hasn't had really a true home arena yet, but all these opponents are cupcakes, and you got to beat all of them. So I think I got to sell Duquesne at 11 wins at this point.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm selling them too. I was starting to like them because they just beat the crap out of all those crappy teams that they played to start the season.
Yeah.
But I think one thing, when you look through the, and I'll, full disclosure, I didn't catch either of those games, but looking through the box score, they don't have much of a bench. They've got Bailey Steele and Lamar Norman getting a lot of minutes, and then like some guy named Ashton Miller got 12 what looks like garbage time minutes in the Marshall game. But then like Evan Buckley, Austin Rotroff, those guys are just getting like very token, like 2 minutes, 4 minutes per game. So they don't have a bench outside of like Bailey Steele and Lamar Norman that they can rely on. So like effectively they really only go 7 deep, which doesn't bode well, and I don't think you don't really see that when they're playing a bunch of tomato cans, but when they're in actual competitive games and Dan Broad's trying to win, then now you can see that, like, okay, who does he trust? Who's he actually playing? And it turns out that Duquesne's not actually that deep.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing that the two losses told us. Second, this is a team that's going to live and die by the three, probably a little bit more than we thought they would. 3 of 16 in the Marshall loss.
5 of 27 in the UAB loss.
5 of 27 in the UAB loss. Thank you. Yeah, so Tavian Dunmartin, we've talked about him. We love him. One of the most fun players in the A-10, also one of the streakiest shooters in the A-10. 1 for 8 from 3 against UAB, and then 1 for 4 against Marshall. And then I think, you don't have – nobody missed a ton of threes against Marshall. It was just like everybody missed 2 or 3 threes like on the team. So then I think Sincere Carey in the Duquesne or in the UAB game was also 1 for 7. So this is a team that, like, if Sincere Carey doesn't have it, if the shots aren't going down, then this is a team that's like, they just don't have, they suffer from a little bit of the same problem as Richmond. It's like they don't have as many ways to win games as maybe it seemed like in the beginning of the year. But also I just don't think their offense is nearly as good as Richmond's either.
To that point, I mean, Duke Caton has no business taking 27 three-point shot attempts in a game. You know, I do see that they tend to rely. I mean, if Tavian Dunn-Martin shooting a lot of shots and, you know, they're giving him open looks, fine. But, you know, this is a team that's shooting 30.5% from three, but 55.9% from two. They're top 10 nationally from two. They're really good from the free throw line. You got to pound the ball inside to Michael Hughes. You got to get Marcus Weathers some looks inside the three-point line because those two guys are shooting better than 66% from the floor. Both pretty decent free throw shooters too. So Duquesne really should not be falling in love with a three-point shot at all. I mean,
That's their style though, man. Over 42% of their shots come from three. That's the style they play, even though
42%? Are you looking at the right thing?
I'm looking at KenPom, three-point attempts to field goal attempts. Sorry, over 42% of their shots come from three. Their three-point percentage is bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, like 27 threes in a game is not a tremendous deviation from the way that they normally play.
That's crazy. I was looking at a different stat, but this is telling about how bad 42.4% is, because if you're taking 42.4% of your field goal attempts from three, but only 30.4% of your points are coming from three-pointers, that's not good.
And I think Duquesne will adjust, because I think, like, teams, you know, when you play a bad schedule like that, you fall into these habits that you can get away with against teams that, like, clearly just don't belong on the court with you. Mm. Like, I don't know. I've caught a fair amount of Duquesne, and if you watch these games like Lipscomb, Columbia, a couple of those teams they played earlier on, it's like those teams just don't even belong on the floor with Duquesne. They're just so much smaller, so much less athletic. They don't really do a lot that makes up for it. So I think there's a chance that, like, Duquesne, I don't want to overreact to these two losses, because I think D'Ambro is a good coach. I think they've got talent. I think they'll adjust. But, you know, the cracks, we're now seeing the cracks in the team that we always knew had to be there. But you just don't see them when they're on an 11 or a 10 game winning streak against, you know, a bunch of sub 200 teams.
Sure. I think we're beating the horse to death here with Duquesne. Let's move
on.
That is what we do. Let's move on to St. Louis, who probably hasn't risen enough in KenPom. You know, we talked about Davidson probably being rated a little too high. I think St. Louis is rated a bit too low at this point.
I am buying the hell out of St. Louis.
Buying the hell out of St. Louis. I am as well at 10-8. I think the Billikens are going to be winning a lot more than 10 games. I'd guess 12 as kind of an over-under at this point, the way they're playing. I think they're right up with Rhode Island as kind of that 3-4 range of two teams that might compete for an at-large bid, but definitely have to prove it in conference play. And, you know, struggled a bit against, I'm going to pronounce the name wrong, but is it Bethune-Cookman?
Bethune-Cookman. Nobody actually knows.
And nobody knows how to. Yeah, I just see that name all over the place. But struggled a bit. I mean, a bit scary.
These winter break games are always strange, man.
I know.
It's like there are no students there. Guys are like probably thinking about finals. I don't know. St. Louis is a good academic school, right?
So like, yeah, you know, and then you take weeks off too, so you kind of get out in and out of the rhythm.
There's like this weird crowd energy. Like I try not to, like, losses are bad, but like these crappy, like, uninspiring wins, like I try not to read too much into them.
I'd agree. But they did get a big win over Kansas State, which we haven't talked about.
They did.
Kansas State isn't great, but, you know, anytime you beat a Big 12 team on the road, I think that game got changed or was officially noted as a road game, even though it was at the Sprint Center. I mean, they had their logo.
The gigantic purple Wildcat took up the entire court.
And I think the student section was there, too. So it did not feel that way at all.
It would be kind of outrageous to not call it a home game or a road game for St. Louis. But yeah, what are your thoughts on St. Louis? I know I've talked about them a lot, but
yeah, I've really liked St. Louis. I've liked the way they've been playing. Free throws have been a struggle this year. That's you know, kind of one thing we know. The one reason I might be a bit skeptical about really buying St. Louis, I mean, I am buying St. Louis, but not really, really buying, is because Gibson Jimerson got hurt. For me, he really had become such a good player and such a good threat for St. Louis to have just when he was on the floor, because he commands so much attention on the perimeter that, you know, all of a sudden you can't go 3 feet off of him and come help inside on Hassan French or Jordan Goodwin. You got to stay on him, and you got to make sure you're covering him from three. And, you know, you lose that shooter. You've got a couple guys like Demaryius Jacobs that have stepped up and shown some firepower from three. Javonte Perkins has looked pretty decent as an offensive weapon too. But, you know, it's just so unfortunate he's out, because he was just kind of the answer that St. Louis really needed in a season where three-point shooting has improved, but just, you know, was terrible last year.
Yeah, they need somebody else to step up. The good news is they still have – they anchor around two of the best players in the A-10.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, and that's why I'm buying them, Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French. They have not gone anywhere. They're back, and they're even better than they were last year.
Yeah.
I think that's a great foundation to start with. I mean, they have an identity, you know. They're just going to beat the shit out of you up and down the court. I think they play a style where they could absolutely drop a game to, like, Fordham. Yeah, maybe not Fordham, but, like, they could drop a game to like a St. Joe's or a GW. But they're also, like, they're going to give Dayton trouble. They're going to give VCU trouble. They were one of the only teams that, like, really gave VCU trouble last year outside of the top four. And I think they still play that style, and I think they're still going to be able to compete at the top of the conference. Do they lose any games to, like, the bottom of the conference, I think, is what you got to worry about, because, you know, with Jimerson out and with the lack of three-point shooting, they absolutely have the potential to drop a couple woofers when the team shoots, like, 40% overall and, like, 1 for 18 from 3 or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, overall, I like the foundation that they're building with. I like guys like Javonte Perkins, Demaryius Jacobs, Yuri Collins. I like those guys. I like somebody to step into more of a kind of shooter-scorer role to take some of the pressure off Hassan French or Jordan Goodwin. I don't know exactly who it's going to be, but I think that they're not too far away from, you know, from turning into that kind of team where, like, it doesn't look like it's such a painful, tedious process for them to score points like it's looked like in the past.
And we haven't seen Fred Thatch since, like, I think it was the Seton Hall game, really. I mean, he played a couple minutes sparingly throughout that 3 or 4 game stretch, but, you know, he's had an illness, so he's been out for a while. So even though you do lose Gibson Jimerson, it's kind of the same team, a little bit of a different team, but you bring back another good defensive guy and somebody who we really haven't seen explode sophomore year due to illness. So he's something to keep an eye on. I agree. I'm buying St. Louis. I think until they prove otherwise, they belong in the conversation for top four, getting that double bye in Brooklyn. And we're going to see how it shakes out on Thursday against Duquesne. I think that's a game to circle on your calendar.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. My boys at Mason aren't playing on Thursday, so I think that might be one of the ones that I prioritize. Haven't quite decided yet. But the other thing is St. Louis's schedule, like, do you realize, like, how good it actually is, like, their resume at this point? Like, wins over Belmont and Kansas State. Only losses are to Seton Hall and to Auburn, which are both, like, very legitimate losses. And then, you know, some other, like, Valpo, Eastern Washington, Boston College, some other, like, decent wins in there. So, like, UMass fans, Mason fans, we would be freaking obnoxious right now if we were carrying a schedule like this into conference play.
It's been solid. And looking back, that Seton Hall game, unfortunately, I wish St. Louis could play that again, or maybe play it now later in the year when they've developed a bit more and gotten a bit more experience, because, you know, that's a team that you should and could beat at home if you don't get off to such a slow start. I remember Seton Hall went up like 15 or 20 in the first couple minutes, and all of a sudden the game was over, even though St. Louis pretty much competed for the rest of the game. But yeah, love their schedule right now, love the way they've been playing, and I think anytime like I mentioned, I know Kansas State doesn't carry a ton of weight, but anytime you beat a top 100 team on the road, that's awesome. So
yep,
love the Billikens, love what they're doing. For the sake of time, let's keep on moving and jump to St. Bonaventure, who KenPom projects at 9-9 at this point. Are you buying, selling, or holding the Bonnies?
I'll hold them. I wanted to like them a little more. 500 feels about right for them. You know, the book on the Bonnies is, like, if Osun gets a lot of minutes, then they're great. If Osun, you know, if he got in foul trouble the other day. I forget what their most recent loss was.
Buffalo.
Who it was to Buffalo. Yeah, so Osun didn't play a lot in that because I think he got in foul trouble and then lost by 5. So it's like, yeah, he got 17 minutes, 5 personal fouls. So he fouled out, wasn't able to have much of an impact on the game. Beyond the question of just like whether or not he's healthy is the question of like, you know, he's still kind of young. He doesn't always get the benefit of the doubt on some calls like more established guys do. You know, he might just get find himself in foul trouble sometimes. And they're just a totally different team defensively. They can't stop anything when Osun's not on the court. When he's out there, they're really good. So I feel like 500 feels right. Kyle Lofton is like getting a little bit better. Still not quite what we expected him to be coming into the season. So I think, I think 500 feels about right for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lofton's really struggled shooting the ball. He played pretty well against Buffalo, and he is the most used player in the country right now. I think that's an interesting nugget. Plays 97.5% of available minutes, so he is an absolute dog out there all game. You know, he doesn't get in foul trouble and ride the bench. But you made the point I was going to make about Osun. Him getting in foul trouble against a Buffalo team that rebounds the ball really well, that really, you know, sunk the Bonnies, even though they were able to build kind of a, I think it was 10 or 12 point lead in the first half. I like the Bonnies around 9-9 as well. I think the Riley Center is always a tough place to play, especially in conference play. You know, the Bona faithful, they get out there and they have a good time, and it's never easy to go up there in Olean and steal a road win. So even if the Bonnies aren't playing great, I think they'll defend their home court pretty well and, you know, manage to be around 500 as well. I think that's a good spot.
Yeah. Schmidt runs guys into the ground too. So I think, I don't think it's a good thing that like Kyle Lofton is playing 97.5% of minutes. Same thing with Dom Welch, 90.4% of minutes, top 30 in the country. You know, I think guys kind of break down at this level over the course of a year, and I think you might see him not be quite as sharp.
What's
as
the quote?
Wears
is,
on.
Is his quote, "You can sleep when you're dead"? Is that Mark Schmidt? I think it is.
Yeah, he's the first one. Yeah.
Man, he's a tough one. I wouldn't want to play for him. Well,
real
I might,
ball buster, that guy.
Yeah. That's the Bonnies. Let's move on to your George Mason Patriots, who.
Woo.
I know, Brian got out there, probably a tough road trip to Dallas. Probably wasn't too much fun when he was at the arena watching George Mason play. I'm sure he had fun otherwise. At TCU, a tough loss. And, you know, Mason kind of dropping in expectations and dropping in KenPom after that one. What do you think about 8 wins? Are you buying or selling?
Brian does these post-game recap videos, and I was telling him for a bit, maybe someday I'll work up the courage to be an in-front-of-the-camera kind of guy, because I thought what he should have done was just, like, go to the nearest bar and just talk about the game, like, have somebody film him talking about the game like he usually does, except he's at a bar, and he's just taking shots, like, while he's talking, because that was really the only way to handle a game like that. Absolutely, like, not competitive whatsoever, kind of embarrassing. Mason, I think I'm gonna buy him for more than 8 wins. It feels weird. I don't know. I feel like I've bought more teams than I've sold, and I think mathematically I don't know if that's the right.
Yeah, that's probably what we're doing. I started to realize that. Everybody's getting wins.
Everybody's getting to 12 wins. Like, no, it doesn't work like that. I think they get more than 8 wins, but you know, Mason's got real problems, and I don't just want to be a Debbie Downer, because there are things to like about Mason. But, like, you know, I had a little tweet cap before the game that I think was absolutely spot on. Like, sometimes I get them right, and I think, like, I said basically 3 things about the TCU game, and they all came true. One was that Mason was fake big. We have good rebounding and block numbers, but it's only because we play teams that are, like, really small, and once you play an actually big team, you're going to get murdered in the paint. That's exactly what happened. We were due for some three-point regression because we had one of the best three-point defenses in the entire country, according to KenPom, going into that game. And then, lo and behold, TCU shoots, like, 60% from three. I still think our perimeter defense is good. I don't think it's that good. So I think those are problems. And then overall, we're just like, there was just a real lack of creativity on offense. Like, we just ran ball screens over and over again. TCU defended them really well, so we just ended up, like, the ball screen gets stonewalled. We end up swinging the ball around the perimeter. Somebody, like, tries to take their man one-on-one, but they're too good. And it's like, that crap is just not going to fly against the top teams in the conference. Like, it looks good when you're playing teams like American and UMBC and whoever else we played at a conference that are terrible. But, you know, Mason has some real concerns. I don't want to, like, overreact to a loss like this. But I would probably project him to finish around 500. So I think I'll buy 8 and 10 to go a little bit over. probably 500, maybe 10-8. But beyond that, it's like, you know, there are some legitimate concerns here.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I would put them at 8 or 9 wins at this point. I think it's kind of interesting looking at George Mason as a whole this year compared to last year. I think the injury of Justin Kyer made this a completely different team from the start. I mean, that's obvious because he was your best player last year. But, I mean, he was taking 15, 16 shots a game towards the end of the year. Really kind of played a good amount of hero ball, it almost seemed. Like, if, you know, the shot clock was winding down and possession wasn't going anywhere, he's going to take a shot. You know, and not having him for the first 6 or 7 games of the year, it had other guys step up like Jordan Miller. You've got Jamal Hartwell and Javon Green taking a lot of shots. But even after he's kind of come back in the lineup, I don't know if he's still – is he still kind of nursing an injury? Because I know he has been playing a ton. But even when he is on the court, it doesn't seem like he's the one – that they're going to, even though he's been George Mason's best player over the past couple seasons, or at least last year.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a good thing. Like, I don't think he's still nursing an injury. I think he's, like, you know, I think he's 100%. Word from the team is that he's been practicing. You know, he's been fully available. I think he missed the UMBC game, but I think that was just precautionary because they knew he played like 9 days later. They knew we weren't going to have problems with UMBC. But no, I think he's fine physically, and I think the problem is that, like, last year you're talking about how much he dominated the ball. That was absolutely necessary because Otis Livingston was kind of broken down. We didn't really have any other great offensive options at that point. And Justin Kyer was, like, so much better as an offensive option than just really anybody else on the team. That I think he scored like 15 or 16 consecutive points for Mason in the last game of the season when St. Bonaventure beat us in the A-10 tournament. And that's because he just kept taking the ball to the rack. It was like the one good matchup that we had basically was Justin Kyer like getting the ball and then doing his thing. But I think this year's team is more balanced than that. And of course, you know, you don't see it against TCU, and I'll say the same thing I said about Duquesne is, like, you can get away with some stuff against, you know, against lesser teams that you can't get away with against good teams. And I think previously Mason had just been sort of like trying to ISO guys, hunting bad matchups, hunting ball screens, and trying to get guys, you know, to get good one-on-one matchups so they could drive to the rim. And that is, like, that just does not fly against teams that are big and physical and defend really well like TCU does. And it won't fly against the top of the A-10 either. So I think that they've got a little bit of soul searching to do in terms of like how they're going to fix that, how they're going to adjust that. I think Kyer's fine. I think he's going to be a fine part of the offense. And I think like he's just got there's a little bit of a learning curve to like learning that you can be a guy and you can be the guy when you need to be the guy, but you're not going to need to be the guy nearly as much and the team is better for it.
I'd agree. I realize we're kind of rambling a bit on all these top teams, and we wanted to get through this a bit quickly. Sorry. So we'll kind of try to do quick hitter on these last five. LaSalle at 8-10. LaSalle's been playing pretty well recently. Finished the non-conference slate 9-3, which is a lot better than I expected them to do. They started the season ranked 200-something in KenPom. They now cracked the top 150. Really haven't struggled with any inferior opponents with the exception of you know, that Iona team at the beginning of the year at home. And I really think this is a team that's gotten better throughout the year. I still think I'm kind of holding LaSalle at 8 wins. I might even sell them. But that's not a product of LaSalle being poor this year. I think that's just a product of the league being stronger as a whole. And I think LaSalle, it's somewhere like 120-something in net, which has been huge because them getting up and actually being like a top 150 team I think that becomes a quadrant 2 road win if you're able to win in Gola Arena. So that's been huge for the entire conference.
Yeah, that's if they stay there. Net's been really volatile. I've been looking at it a lot more recently, and it's still like teams will like get a good win or a bad loss, and they'll move like 30 spots on the outcome of one game, basically. So NET's still really volatile. I think I'm selling LaSalle as well. I don't quite see them getting to 8 wins. Their schedule is not, like, super favorable. They get, like, I think they get Fordham twice. They get UMass twice. Two cracks at St. Joe's. One shot at GW. And then it's, like, a lot of teams that I think are probably better than they are. So I don't quite see them getting much higher. They shoot really well from three, which is good, but I feel like this also might be like a fake good kind of statistic because the teams that they've played haven't been great. If you look at their three-point numbers against the like in the three losses or against the better teams that they've played, it's just kind of not there. So I think that I think I'm probably selling them from eight conference wins. I would see them probably around 6 and 7.
Sure.
6 or 7, excuse me.
Let's move on. Massachusetts is next, and their projected record of 6 and 12. Massachusetts has been an interesting team. They've been young and actually went through a pretty tough non-conference schedule. I mean, you had that six-game stretch. We played Virginia, St. John's, Rutgers, South Carolina, Harvard, and Yale. And I think the hope from Minutemen fans was that, you know, you win one of those games. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And a recent loss to Akron on the road was actually a game that I think Massachusetts could have won. This team's been young, and we've expected them to be pretty poor this year. I think all things considered, they've been a little bit better than what they were expected to do preseason. Winning six games against this schedule obviously isn't something to shame them for because, they're young, they've dealt with injuries, and that's just going to make it tough for the team overall. But I think six losses at this point is about where I'd put them. They have a tough close to the season pretty much with VCU, Richmond, LaSalle, and Rhode Island as their four final games. So we might see them go out with a couple losses, but definitely some chances for wins in there against, you get George Washington at home, you get LaSalle at home. I think six wins is probably appropriate for Massachusetts at this point.
Yeah, I think I would hold them there. If I wasn't going to hold them, I would sell them. I think they're talented, but they just had Cy Chapman enter the transfer portal, which hurts their depth a little bit. We've talked about them. I don't think the book has changed on them a whole lot. They're talented, but they're young. They're going to, they're going to have some nights where you're like, you look at them, you're like, holy shit, this UMass team is really good, because they're going to have nights where Trey Mitchell's playing well. They're going to have nights where the threes are falling, and they're going to hang with some really good teams on those nights. They might pull off a couple pretty big upsets. They have the talent to do it. I think overall it's just like it's going to be a roller coaster for them. It's been a roller coaster so far. I don't think the roller coaster ride is over yet, because that's just what happens with young teams with a lot of talent that are still figuring things out. Is they look great one night, they look awful the next. And that, I think, is going to be like the rest of the season for UMass.
I think six wins would be a nice building block going into next season. And as these guys make the sophomore jump, you expect hopefully this team to be a lot better.
If they can hold it together, man, if they can bring back like Sean East, Trey Weeks, Trey Mitchell, or TJ Weeks, excuse me, Trey Mitchell, those guys, Samba Diallo, like if their core returns next season, they could be really good.
Yeah. Next up, we've got Fordham, we have St. Joseph's at 4 and 14 projected record. St. Joseph's has not played in seemingly forever. Their last game was on December 19th. It's kind of weird the way they scheduled that. But 4 wins for the Hawks, over under, buy, sell. What do you think?
I would hold 4 wins. I think if you put the over under at 3.5, I would take the over. So I would project them right at 4 wins. So I don't know if like another team that's talented, but or they've got some talent. Ryan Daly is going to be he's going to be a big pain in the ass, but it's not a whole lot more complicated than like they don't have a bench that's their first year playing together. It's kind of like an odd mishmash of parts at this point, so as a result they just jack a ton of threes. It's going to work couple times against bad teams, but overall I think they're in for a long season.
Yeah. Taylor Funk's been out too. Do you know when he's coming back, if he's coming back this year?
I do not. I forgot to ask him.
Yeah. If Taylor Funk could come back, that could be huge, but I'm probably gonna sell St. Joseph's at 4 wins. I mean, they've been pretty pitiful in this this stretch, losing games at home to St. Francis, PA, and Lafayette, and not necessarily only losing, like absolutely getting blown out. They're down to 245th in KenPom. Really haven't looked the part since their win at Connecticut. And like you said, I mean, there will be one or two nights where this team will just shoot lights out. I heard an interesting quote in college basketball on TV the other day saying, you get like 34 games in a season, and 4 of them you just throw away because 2 you play incredibly out of your mind, and 2 you play horrible, and those games are just gonna happen. I think that game happened for St. Joseph's at the beginning of the year against Connecticut. Maybe there's another one in conference play. Hopefully it's not against like Dayton or VCU, and you know they completely ruin our at-large
chances.
It's so
funny, yeah. I don't want to spend too much time on them for obvious reasons, but like if you look at the best teams they've played, like they beat Connecticut, they lost to Florida by 8, they lost to Villanova by 12, but I was watching that game.
It was close.
Closer than that. They were close down the stretch. And then they've just gotten freaking murdered by like Temple.
The exception was Temple. I mean, that's a good team, and they got
Temple,
killed.
Lafayette. Yeah. Loyola Chicago pulled away from them pretty easily. Like, yeah, they've been interesting, and I think that's going to be their season as well.
Mm-hmm. They're going to be bad. Moving on. George Washington at 5-13. Buy, sell, hold.
Sell. I don't quite know how you I don't quite know how they get to 5 wins. I guess they get 2 cracks at Fordham. But then beyond that, it's like, who are they better than, and who's close enough for them to like catch them on a bad night? And I don't really know the
answer there. Normally I would say that, you know, the bottom part of the league would usually be around 5 or 6 wins, but it just feels like this season, like the worst 3 teams are just at a completely different level than the rest of the A-10. You know, like St. Joseph's, George Washington, Fordham, I wouldn't be surprised if they have a combined like 11 wins in conference play.
Yeah, and I think that's where all the buys that we were doing earlier, for me at least, I think they come from the bottom of the league.
I would hope.
Like St. Joe's at 4-14, I could see George Washington and Fordham at like, you know, 2 or 3 conference wins a piece. So I think that's where I think that's where you start to see some of the separation here.
And this isn't a sting at any team in particular, but you know, none of us want George Washington to beat anybody that has any sort of shot at large this year, because for the sake of the conference as a whole, you just can't have wins like that or losses like that that just ruin the league's entire chances. So we'll see. I kind of agree with you. I don't know how they're getting to 5 wins. I think 4, maybe 3 is more realistic. It's a race to the bottom, though, and I think Fordham, which is our segue, is kind of leading that race. They're also projected 5-13, and I don't know. For me, that is an obvious sell.
Fordham, I've tweeted about this a little bit, but I think that KenPom has a really difficult time calculating outliers. Fordham has the single, or I guess it's the second worst overall strength of schedule at this point, 352nd in the country. And I think for that reason, KenPom is just like totally unable to evaluate whether or not Fordham's any good. They've beaten, I mean, I'm totally serious. Like,
yeah.
They've beaten the only team, their best win is KenPom 219 Grand Canyon. Everything else is in the 300s, I guess, with the exception of Fairleigh Dickinson, which is 298. And that was a 3-point home win. Fordham is terrible. Fordham is really, really bad. There's a non-zero chance that they don't win a game in conference this year. I don't think I'm being dramatic when I say 5-13 is just an outrageous projection for them. 2 wins, maybe 3 wins, I think you see from Fordham. Like, I'm willing to bet on that. I'll put money on it. I also, one of the other things I tweeted about was like their defense. It's 108 in KenPom right now, but it was top 100 as of like a week or two ago, and I'm willing to bet the lives of several close friends that they don't have a top 100 defense or a top 108 defense.
Wow.
It's just like, I think these, you know, I think KenPom, I love KenPom, I look at it all the time, we're looking at it when we're talking about these teams, but I think it's like important to understand where those cracks exist. And with Fordham, they've played an absolutely awful schedule. They're not a good team. I think they're gonna be really, really, really bad in conference.
Yeah.
They're not getting the 5 wins.
I would agree. You heard it here first, from PD Buckets, betting the life of his
a brave stand against
Fordham basketball. I think you are the first person to ever bet anything that significant on Fordham basketball. But you know what? I don't think you're wrong in that sense. They have been abysmal in this home stretch against Manhattan, Bryant, Tennessee State, James Madison. You just cannot lose to names like those on your own floor. All KenPom sub 200 teams. Good God, Fordham.
Haven't played a true road game yet either.
No.
They get VCU away, which I'm not a gambling man, but I think, do you remember last season where like Fordham's conference opener was against VCU.
And they won.
And well, no.
Two seasons ago.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. But no, last year the only reason I remember it was because people were talking about the spread being so low. The spread was like 7 or 8 points, and I was like, I don't gamble, but I was like, that seems weird because Fordham's awful and VCU's like really, really good, and of course VCU won by 30. It's just like it's going to be the varsity against the JV again, and if they go down to the Siegel Center on Thursday.
If you're curious, I just wanted to look. VCU right now a 19.5-point favorite tomorrow over Fordham, so that's going to feel like a bye game, but it's a conference game, so. I think that wraps it up for the 14 teams in the league. We covered all of them. We don't do that a lot here on a Hey 10 podcast, but it is your lucky day.
We want you to feel seen.
We do want you to feel seen. That's been buy, sell, hold. All 14 teams in the conference. And before we get to questions from Twitter, we wanted to do, and we're trying to keep this under an hour, and we'll see if we can, if we talk fast. But we're going to try to do a quick updated A-10 first team all-conference prediction. I believe you and I did this at the beginning of the year before anything, you know, woo, happened, and we were probably so off. But I'll give you kind of the five I've got right now. You give me the five you've got, and we could talk about it briefly. But Obi Toppin is clearly the A-10 player of the year in my mind, and it should stay that way, barring injury or, I don't know, he just, like, stops caring. I don't know. He's number one. I think Jacob Gilliard, you mentioned he struggled the last couple games. He hasn't played well in those two out of three that Richmond lost, but he's still been incredible this year. His numbers are real efficient. I think he's kind of the gear that makes this this Richmond team run, so I really do expect him to be on the first team all-conference at the end of the year. Fats Russell, we pick on Fats sometimes on this podcast, but he's been playing out of his mind this year. Really took a step up after kind of having that sophomore slump. I do expect him to be on the first team all-conference at the end of the year. Finally, Jordan Goodwin, one of the best rebounding guards in the country, probably the best rebounding guard in the country. He kind of does everything for St. Louis. If he could figure out his free throw shooting a little bit, you know, he'd be a absolutely complete player, but he already does everything for the Billikens. And finally, I've got Marcus Santos Silva. I know he hasn't played great in the last couple games for the Rams, but looking back to conference play last year, he just demolished some of these smaller teams in the league. You know, I look at the A-10 tournament game where he had like 26 points and 20 rebounds or something like that. I expect him to have another couple games like that as we approach conference play and the competition gets a little bit softer, maybe compared to like Purdue and Tennessee.
Right. I like all the players on your list. I think there's one problem with it.
Okay.
Problem is that your players come from five different teams.
Ooh.
Over the past few years, if you want to impress your friends and project the all-conference first team at the end of the season, it's very rare for a team that finishes outside the top four to put somebody on the first team. It hasn't happened in like at least the last 3 or 4 years, maybe even further back. It's like in the top four, one of those teams always doubles up and sends a second guy to the first team. Last year it was Kellen Grady and Jag. The year before, I think it was Matt Mobley and Jalen Adams from Bonaventure. I forget who it was the year before that. It might have been two Rhode Island guys or two VCU guys. But first team is like almost exclusively made up of guys who finished in the top four. So I think that I agree with Obi, and I think the question is, like, which of those teams do you see not finishing top four? So I think I'll take Obi, I'll take Santos Silva, I'll take Fats, because I see those guys finishing top four. Whether it's Gilliard or Goodwin, or I think I'd probably choose Gilliard at this point, because I like Richmond just a little bit more to finish in the top four. But then I think I'm going to go with Jalen Crutcher.
That's just
how the voting goes, I think. And I think Dayton's going to be so far ahead of the rest of the A-10 that Dayton's going to get two guys on there. Or since VCU spreads the love so much, you might see Marcus Evans and Marcus Santos Silva double up on it.
Yeah, Marcus Evans.
My pick right now would be Toppin.
Marcus Evans is going to have to start playing a lot better, though.
Yep. Yep, fully agree. But yeah, that's where I would go. Are we going to get to Twitter questions?
I think so. We got a couple.
Can we please?
Yes, let's do it. first question we've got from Twitter. at, if you ever want to ask us questions on Twitter, at A10Talk, at PD Buckets, make sure you hit us up. But the first question comes from Guy McFly6, and he said, what would SLU have to do in A10 play to have a realistic shot at an at-large bid?
13 and 5, I think.
13 and 5? I think that's reasonable. I think it's less about how they finish and more about who they beat or who they don't beat. You know, I think if you lose to a Fordham or you lose to a St. Joseph's, that almost all but ruins your chances. And I do think you're going to need a win over a Dayton or a VCU if you want a shot.
For sure.
Go on.
No, sorry, go ahead.
Dayton is kind of, you know, that that gem at the top that you could play them at home or on the road, and it's going to be a quad one win either way because they're like top 10 right now in the net rankings, and I think they'll stay up there as they continue to kind of mow down the bottom of the half of the league. So the Arch Barron Cup is going to have a lot more weight this year than it normally does, and I think if St. Louis is able to beat them at Chi-Fitz Arena, avoid losses to St. Joseph's, George Washington, Fordham, and I think, like you mentioned, get 12 or 13 wins, they'll start popping up on the bubble.
Yep, I agree with that. And I think when we talk about a tough schedule, like, remember, every difficult game is also like an opportunity for a good win, right?
Right.
Like Duquesne, Richmond, Davidson on the road, like regardless of your opinion of those teams, whether they're good or not, but those are three away games that are going to be opportunities for Q2 wins, right? And
sure.
are not going to be bad losses if you don't win them. They also get Dayton on the road. I think, again, they play a style that I think is going to give Dayton some trouble. And then they also get Rhode Island on the road as well.
Yeah.
So like they've got opportunities to continue bolstering the schedule throughout mm-hmm. conference play.
It'd help if Kansas State and Belmont get better too. I think
That's
Belmont
right.
has a good chance of winning the Ohio Valley this year. They're by far the highest rated team in KenPom in their conference, although the Ohio Valley is not great. Kansas State, though, worst team in the Big 12, and I think it might stay that way, and they might continue to fall. So root on Belmont if you're a St. Louis Billikens basketball fan. Let's move on to the final question from Twitter, and this is a fun one. This is the kind of content you come to the Hey 10 podcast for. We have a question from one of our own A10 Talk writers, Austin Daisy, on Twitter, and he comes with the hard hitting, do you think Grant Golden could wrestle a bear? And PD, I'll defer to you to answer this question first. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts on Grant Golden wrestling a bear. It's an interesting question because, like, realistically, no. Like, nobody can. but is he, like, on the short list of guys in the A-10 that could wrestle a bear? Like, absolutely. And it helps that he looks like Moe Schrute, Dwight Schrute's cousin there, who, like, definitely knows, like, I don't know, knows, like, all the facts about bears you would need to know in order to stand a fighting chance against one.
Yeah. The question is interesting because when you say could he wrestle a bear, I mean, I think he could try. Technically, anybody
we all could, yeah.
Try. I'm thinking of like the scene from The Revenant where you know, the guy has like a 15-minute fight with the bear and ends up winning. Grant Golden, kind of with the long hair and the beard, looks like he was an outdoorsman in high school and looks like he you know, did some hunting or something. But it's kind of interesting because I don't know if Grant Golden really had the long hair his freshman year, did he? I think he kind of had the short, clean look and then kind of decided after the redshirt season, like, screw it, I'm going for the, you know, the full outdoors woodsman kind of look.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Guys, like, you got to remember college basketball players, like, they're people too. You know, I think we all experiment.
This is what we do, man.
Looks.
We are two grown men sitting at home talking together, talking about a college basketball player's hairdo.
We all experimented with different looks in college, right?
Yeah, I guess, like, man. Yeah.
And if you were lucky, that's where the experimenting ended. But yeah, no, I think he would be on the short list for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up for today. We didn't get under an hour. We got to, it's 101 right now and counting. We'll see if anything gets edited out. But Petey, it's been a lot of fun talking to you, and I'm looking forward to conference play. You know, any kind of parting thoughts as we wrap up here?
Parting thoughts, are, I guess we didn't address it like specifically, but we've just got this big bucket of teams in the middle of the conference that have like no really good wins, but no really bad losses, or like one or two really bad losses, you know? And it's just so tough to evaluate in that regard. So I think like, we don't know. Like, we're all just guessing at this point, and I think it's going to be really fun to watch things unfold, watch things develop. I think you're going to see some tier separation start to become really clear as conference play moves on. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah. I'm gonna close out with a prediction here. I'm thinking at this point in the year,
hell yeah,
three A-10 teams in the NCAA tournament. I think Dayton will be in the NCAA tournament. I think one of VCU, Rhode Island, and St. Louis will be in the NCAA tournament from an at-large perspective. And then whoever wins the A-10 tournament, because it's never the number one or the number two seed, it's always like 3, 4, 5, or 6. So somebody wild's getting in. That's what I'm saying.
You're ruling out Dayton or VCU winning the tournament.
They never do. It's always like St. Joseph's or David's. Well, it's not going to be St. Joseph's this year. But, you know, it could be like a Richmond
That's a take. Yeah.
Or like a Duquesne. Somebody just catches fire and goes off. But that's going to be fun. We'll talk a bit more about that later in the season. But, you know, I'm looking forward to getting up in Brooklyn because I think this could be one of the best A-10 tournaments we've seen in a long time.
Hell yeah. Fully agree, man.
Well, PD, happy 2020. I'm hoping the A-10 stays undefeated this season. Unfortunately, that's going to be tough with conference play coming around. But you know what? A man can dream. I'm looking
forward. Here's my prediction. A-10 is going to be 500 in
the A-10. Damn. Actually, are there any Big Five Philly games? I don't think there are because sometimes there would be something.
Oh, no, we've got Rode Island playing Brown.
All right, you're already wrong. Yeah. So discount your prediction. Yep. We'll see how mine turns out, but
already 0-1 in the game. Right.
Damn it!
Look at that.
Oh man. Well, PD, I'm sure we'll talk soon. I got a lot of basketball to catch up on, and you've got a sick baby to tend to. So
that's right.
We'll be signing off for now. Thanks, guys, for listening. This has been the Hey 10 Podcast with Grant Lebeds and PD Buckets.
Have you ever drafted a will for yourself? Should you create a trust? What about obtaining financial or medical powers of attorney? If you're not sure what to do, give the lawyers of Condori, Murad, and Neeson a call. With locations in both Fairfax and Arlington, the KMN Law Firm is the place to go for all your real estate-related needs. Regardless of where you live, they'll be able to guide you through the process in a convenient and comforting manner. Give them a call at 703-385-2080 or visit them online at www.kmnlawfirm.com. And be sure to tell them the Giant Killer team sent you. Again, that's www.kmnlawfirm.com.